Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are just a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica. That was one of those sitcom show opens that you're famous for.
I'm putting a little stank on my intro this morning, trying to make myself sound happier than I actually am. I'm quite unhappy in reality.
That's the Greatest Gen brand promise. Are you kidding?
Yeah, we've not been having a great couple of weeks, Adam. I don't even remember if I talked about this on here, but we had like all these power problems in our apartment last
right.
week, and then carbon monoxide alarm went off where we had to evacuate the building for several hours. And this morning we wake up to a text from our next door neighbor like, hey, do you guys drive a Volvo?
That is not the message you want to get from anyone.
And we go out and look across the street where it was parked, and it looks like a giant like picked up our car and just took a bite out of the back of it. Like somebody smashed it really, really hard and did not stop or leave a note. They just drove off.
It's crazy that the smasher would be in such good condition to drive away, because you sent me a picture. You, Jackie and Lori, gave me a picture of the car.
Yeah.
And I was like, there's no way the other car is driving away from this.
I'm
Volvo's a sturdy machine.
It is a sturdy machine. This is a collision where, like, I imagine every airbag in the other car went, you know?
I mean, unless the guy who hit you, and again, I want to be clear, I'm not putting it out there that he did, but that one guy in the open-top Jeep that blasts music at at 12 volume, like, that's a vehicle that would survive ramming into you. Like that.
Yeah, and that's also a vehicle that has nary an airbag.
Right, that's a vehicle made for the chrome.
Yeah, no, this was a Lexus SUV that did it.
Whoa, and you know?
Yeah, because my neighbor was like having a cup of coffee in her living room and heard it, and she ran to the window to see what happened, and she saw this car speed off. And
wow.
We have there's pieces of it all over the road where it happened too.
There's car DNA. Everywhere.
Yeah, like I can tell you exactly what the paint color was because I have a piece of its bumper.
Wow.
And yeah. So
when someone hit and ran me, the other car didn't even stop. They just kept going. Did your neighbor say whether or not this Lexus even stopped?
I think that this person was probably extremely drunk and just May or may not have even noticed that they did that.
Man, extremely drunk at 6:30 in the morning is a kind of drunk.
That is a look.
I remember those days from college.
It's been a challenging 7 to 10 days, and
I'm really sorry to hear that, man.
Yeah, it was one of those mornings where I had to make like 3 million phone calls to, you know,
yeah,
set up the insurance claim, just all of the things. And
now there's no escape from quarantine. You have no vehicle.
Yeah. My in-laws were kind enough to, you know, because they're not going anywhere. They were like, a reason to leave the house for for anything at all? So they came and they have two cars. So they gave us, they're letting us borrow one of their cars.
Hey,
not that we
sweet.
Like have that many places to drive. My wife does have to go to work at least a couple times a week still.
You like to have the option.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we're very lucky that she does not have to get on a bus to do that.
We're very lucky that this accident didn't happen with you two in the car.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, it's a bad enough accident that I think if we had been in the car, we would probably have neck things to deal with for a long time.
As it is, you're the only one in that relationship with the neck thing. Am I right?
Yeah. yeah. Yeah, no, it's like, it's weird. It's like, It's just a, hey, thank you for leaving me a giant hassle to wake up to.
You know,
drunk person.
It feels like over the last few weeks, there's been a lot of that shit going around. Yeah. I know my wife had some car stuff lately. Even setting aside the bad news of the world, just the local bad news of of a Ben and Adam seems to be pretty frequent. And I think, I don't know if it was you who told me this or someone else, but like there just isn't a great big sample size of anything else going on in our lives. So anything that happens to us at, like lately is probably going to be bad.
Yeah.
Because and there's no opportunity for good.
Right. Yeah. I was texting with our buddy Chris Bowman this morning about it. And I was like, you know, just some good news would be really fucking nice right now.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah, you said it.
The other side of it is like, this all is a drag, but I'm also like very fortunate to like, you know, not have been hurt. And also like, I'm like otherwise mostly fine. You know, it's been inconveniences, you know, and I know that that's like, there's a lot of other people experiencing things that are way worse than inconveniences. So.
Right. A ventilator is a little more than an inconvenience.
Right.
To a lot of people.
Not to mention a lack of a ventilator.
Right. One thing you said while we were texting earlier was, I was like, hey, do you want to just kick the show to another day? And you were like, no, this is something good to look forward to. And I agree.
Yeah. I'm always buoyed by recording an episode of The Greatest Generation. So do you want to get into season 6, episode 14, One Little Ship?
Realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
This is a silly, silly episode, and we know right away what it is because Kira just can't stop laughing about what a silly episode this is going to be.
Just because we are shrinking three people to the size of coffee cups.
Smaller, actually.
Right.
The little D is out doing some big D kind of work, right? Like being tasked with scanning a subspace anomaly is not the way your typical DS9 episode opens.
They even mention, like, isn't it nice that we can take a break during all this war to go do some science?
It is nice, Adam. And it's a fun kind of science where Dax, Bashir, and O'Brien are going to get very wee.
Significant shrinkage.
This episode really asks a lot of you. Maybe more than any other episode has. Because, like, the Starfleet really jumps to human trials on things fast, right?
Yeah.
They know what's going to happen. They're sending a runabout with human beings into this compression anomaly.
Right.
They're ready for human testing. They didn't even do the rabbits thing. They went from probe to runabout.
Do you think that that's just the like 30 minutes before the episode starts? Like, do we come in media race? Like we're pretty sure that this is safe to send a runabout based on the success of our rhesus monkey probe?
I don't know. But like part of what this episode is teaching you right up front is that it's fine. Everything's fine. Like the people on the runabout, not worried. Like, they've planned for this. They saw the probe come back A-okay.
You're sure we'll return to our normal size once we clear the anomaly?
The probes did. You saw the data.
That actually, like, the more I think about it, must be what happened, right? Because, like, a lot of people think that the littleness element that is being brought into play here is very funny. And I feel like they must have some object lesson in that.
It's real.
Taste it. It's delicious. It's just gotten smaller, that's all.
I don't understand why this isn't painful or they don't feel it in any way. Like, I think we've been told throughout Star Trek that there is a feel to being transported. It's tingly.
Like, right.
But when the runabout goes through the anomaly, we don't get a sensation, and I wish we did.
That would be fun. Like, I feel like I'm in a trash compactor, Captain.
Or like different parts of your body shrink at different times. Like Bashir's dong is 5 feet long, and like the circumference of a fire hydrant.
I'm just going to turn the other direction.
I shall choose to take the zero. There appears to be no book big enough to cover this erection.
Nog and Worf don't see what the funniness is, but Sisko and Kira for sure do, and I feel like Dax and Bashir do.
Mm-hmm.
But O'Brien is not keen on it.
No,
just not in love with the idea of being small.
He doesn't want to be wee.
Almost less that he doesn't want to be wee is that he's concerned about being unwee. Mm-hmm. He's feeling some ennui about unwee.
You said it, buddy. Aren't we all? We also get a case of Worf poem blue balls at the beginning of this episode.
With two episode titles back to back like that, how will we choose? This might be one of those two CD title situations where there's...
Oh, yeah. Speaker box, The Love Below.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
It's like we both did solo albums, but we released them together.
One of those fat jewel case situations.
Yeah. Love that.
What are you smirking at?
There is an ancient Klingon tradition that we've never heard of writing a poem to commemorate an important historical event, which this apparently is. So Worf has been tasked with this, but we don't get to hear what he's got because they start to head into the anomaly, right?
Yeah, and all does not go according to plan because as soon as, like, here's the thing, like the runabout is tethered to the little D by way of a tractor beam. And so the runabout heads in, and as soon as it does, bangers get dropped on the little D with the ferocity.
Yeah the little D gets surprise attacked by Jem'Hadar, and this goes really quickly. Like, this is a very brutal fight scene.
Sisko's like, we called time out. We were doing science, guys.
We were on a break!
You can't attack us while we're doing science.
Yeah. I wish that the Jem'Hadar had, like, shown any interest in the... Because, like, you know, like, one of the cases that Worf is making is, like, if we can understand this thing, maybe we can open subspace tunnels. We could do Borg-style jump arounds. Like, this would give us a huge tactical advantage over the Jem'Hadar. But the Jem'Hadar don't give a shit about that. They're barely aware of the subspace anomaly being proximate to where they finally got their W on the little D.
I wonder if when you're breaking this story, you ever play around with the idea of the Jem'Hadar tick being shrunk along with the runabout and then little D where'd they go?
Like a mini dogfight in the engine room would be fun.
That's what I'm saying. And then that sets up the little D as a location for a space battle.
Yeah. I mean, that probably adds a lot of complexity to your special effects budget. So,
right. That probably does all sorts of fucked up things to the white on a molecular level, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like fucking concentrated, man.
We're told a little later that oxygen is a little weird inside and outside the runabout. I wonder if, like, messing with the white, if you've been shrunk, could really fuck you up.
Yeah. I mean, you got to be careful with that stuff.
Yeah.
So the end of our cold open is Jem'Hadar beaming onto the bridge, taking over the little D.
Surrender, or you will all be killed.
It's nice to remember how dangerous these guys are, that they can score a victory like this suddenly.
I like episodes where ships get taken over, but can you remember one where the Federation takes over an enemy ship? It seems like the scoreboard is not in their favor.
Yeah.
In these situations. Really
it's not their way, you know?
It's not.
I mean, there is a time-honored tradition of having a Federation ship being taken over and then having little people be involved in rescuing it.
Right.
I want to take the little D back from the Jem'Hadar. I want to do it now.
How about... Can you imagine the McLaughlin group
issue one
before this mission, and Worf and Dax are in there, and Worf is like, look, I want to be clear, I haven't misunderstood anything. We're talking about turning the crew, including my wife, little and not young, right? Little. Specifically little, not young. Like, and I can't emphasize this enough. I've been through this situation.
Age won't change. Am I correct in saying that? Yes? Not change at all?
Mr. Worf, like, shut the fuck up.
O'Brien is like, my wife's never stopped having night terrors after she was made young. Little I can do. Young, I can't do.
I can't risk going back any littler than I already am.
Bashir is like, he's got like a glass of indeterminate yellowish liquid, and he's like, I could see being little being quite nice.
So we get our little D takeover in a theme, but after the theme, we're back on the Rubicon, and the damage is severe. It's a fun kind of damage too, because it's a blinding kind of damage. They've had to lower their shutters, their storm shutters.
With the blast shield down, I can't even see. How am I supposed to fight?
And their sensors are down, and they can't communicate either.
They've got a lot of work to be done, and it's not just the ship. Like, they're all banged up. This is like repair and damage assessment work that's being done by Dax and O'Brien while Bashir runs the like dermal regenerators over their faces and stuff. Right. So I mean, like non-trivial damage, and they need to see where they're going. They need to start moving. And all of that stuff is going to need to be addressed by the chief. But, you know, he's the guy that you want in a situation like this.
I feel like we're going to turn ourselves into conversational knots talking about the little D and the Rubicon. Not the so little anymore as the little
the
D.
The littler R.
Right.
So
back on the little D, the Jem'Hadar are sort of taking stock of their big score. It's great. The mood is joyful. They're like, we finally bagged our whale here. Like, getting the Defiant was a big, big score.
Yeah, and there's a couple of Jem'Hadar that we meet in this scene. The first is a younger Jem'Hadar who is kind of like giving an attaboy to the older second.
It must be gratifying for an elder to end his career with a victory.
And we come to understand that these dudes are of two different stripes, in fact. One of them, the older, is a Gamma Quadrant Jem'Hadar. That's Ixtana Rax. And the first is an Alpha Quadrant bred Jem'Hadar, Kudakitan. And he's like Uruk-hai. He's like been purpose-bred for taking over the Alpha Quadrant in the Alpha Quadrant.
Yeah, it's one of those things where if you're born in Quadrant, like, you get patriated into that Quadrant.
You're saying he's an Alpha Quadrant anchor baby?
Yeah, he is.
Jesus, Adam.
Yeah, that's how you do it.
Wow. So you're kind of like right-wing anti-immigration, anti-Jem'Hadar immigration activist? So what you're saying?
I mean, it wasn't always called anchor baby with derision. I mean, I grew up knowing a lot of military families with kids who were born in Peru and stuff, and they had dual citizenship. Mm. So that's fun.
See,
if you're an Alpha Quadrant Jem'Hadar, you can pass through the wormhole without having to show your passport.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. I mean, I'm wondering, I think that the Dominion's idea is that the Alpha Quadrant and the G Quad are going to be under one jurisdiction pretty soon. So it'll be like state-to-state travel going through that wormhole.
This guy, Kadekatan, is played by Scott Thompson Baker. Did you read about this guy?
I did not.
He won a $100,000 prize on Star Search.
Whoa.
Good job by him. He parlayed his Star Search win into like soap opera acting credits.
Wow. He's in a Coen Brothers film. He's in A Serious Man.
Can you imagine? He really
did. He's also in Mr. Deeds, the Adam Sandler comedy. How many people can claim an Adam Sandler movie and a Coen Brothers movie?
Not many. Scott Thompson can.
Yeah. Good for him.
Yeah. this guy Extanarax and Kudakatan are at each other's throats almost immediately, because Extanarax used to be the first, but now he's the second. He's been demoted because of his quadrant upbringing by the Vorta. The Vorta think that if you were born in a quadrant that you're doing missions in, that makes you a better first.
The Alpha Quadrant Jem'Hadar have been tailored for Alpha Quadrant combat, so they're getting preferential treatment. They've made the Gammas into a bunch of real cucks.
Except, like, he's a real squeaky wheel, this Extanarax. Yeah. Like, he's not just eating the shit and loving it.
Yeah, he's got a lot of experience.
He's emboldened to second guess the Kudakatan guy too.
He knows how to lead a group of Jem'Hadar, and he's also extremely suspicious in a way that the first is not. Like, he's always counseling caution in a way that that the first ignores.
This always happens. Like, the veteran guy, their advice is ignored by the younger guy. And, like, this Extanarax has 1,000 missions under his belt. This is going to be his last one.
Going out with a bang.
It's part of what Kudakatan, like, hammers him with over and over again. It's like, you're too old. You're going to be retired anyway. Like, shut the fuck up. Mind your own business, please. What the fuck?
Look at you. You're so old.
Too old.
Really dangly Jem'Hadar white straw out of him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That thing really starts to sag after a few years. The plot that they discuss with the Vorta, who's back on the Tick, is that they're going to get this thing moving and then go pull a surprise attack on a Federation dilithium mining operation.
Surprise, motherfucker.
And to do that, they need the warp engines back online. So they're going to go get Sisko out of holding to discuss how that's going to happen. We cut down to the mess hall where Nog, Kira, Worf, and Sisko have been confined. Worf is stamping around complaining about how he's really bad at security.
I should have foreseen this.
And everybody's like, we know, Worf. We wouldn't be here if you were good at security.
Nog is like shoved his head upside down in the replicator, and it's just like pouring soft serve ice cream into his mouth. We're not
That'd be really
working.
Cool to see. Like it's like materializing like 2 inches above his open maw.
We should do more fun food effects on this show.
Yeah, what the hell? These writers have no imagination.
Yeah.
They're just getting their conversation steered toward the idea of retaking the Defiant when the Jem'Hadar come grab Sisko and take him up to the bridge.
Sisko in this conversation mentioned something along the lines of, you know, I think we have a little time here, because remember how much of a difficult situation it was to fly one of their ships?
Like, yeah.
They're going to have just as difficult of a time flying this one.
Yeah.
So that gives us time to come up with a plan.
On the littler R, they get the shutters open, and they are expecting, I think, to see space or nebula or something when they get the shutters open. But what they see is just a wall of metal.
5,000 meters away, and it still fills the screen.
And this is a very fun reveal shot where they discuss what this could be. Bashir is like craning his neck to read the symbols on this wall. And then we zoom out to show that the Rubicon is quite wee indeed relative to the giant little D.
This is a fun effect here. We really take a tour of the little D in this moment.
I was born with a tangled urethra. So when I came out, they did surgery on me, okay? They're scarring down there.
Little D is fucked up. It's got some serious dino damage on the hull when we see the wide shot.
I like what they do with the score here. We get the single brass instrument of accidental compression. We get that a few times in this episode, but it really starts here.
Yeah.
It's like a muted trumpet.
Yeah. They do a little bit of math. They're like holding their fingers up, like, we're this tall or this tall, and then the ship is this big. And O'Brien realizes that they're going to be able to fit in the bunghole of the ship. The exhaust pipe is just big enough to fly the compressed runabout through, and they're like, at this point they have no idea that the ship has been taken over, so they're just all about trying to get the attention of the crew.
It would be really funny if at this moment they discover that they haven't shrunk, but the little D has gotten huge. How would they know?
Yeah, and they they just leave it big for the rest of the series. Like when they fly into battle with fleets of Jem'Hadar and Cardassians, they just like cruise right through them. They collect on the front of it, like bugs on the front of your car when you drive cross country.
Worf and Dax's relationship has become super hypersexual. Worf is like, I did not know how much I wanted this.
Now I can get up in them guts, literally.
Finally, Jadzia is enough for me.
Your ankylosaur is bigger than I am, and I would have it no other way. A warrior's ankylosaur.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail.
A fucking pail.
Mr. Bucket, I have to revert back to my living state.
Oh,
I don't use the bucket anymore.
We do get a bit of admin business here before we go into the little D, and that's the reason why the runabout has remained small is that they didn't leave the anomaly on the same path that they entered. So we've sort of put that goal out into the distance. Eventually, yeah. We're going to have to go back in that anomaly to undo this.
We're going to have to re-embiggen.
Right. And the theory is that they should still be able to do that at some point. But the first order of business is getting on board the ship.
On the bridge of the little D, the first and the second are bickering about getting the ship going again. And this is in the context of Sisko being brought up and saying, like, yeah, I can get the ship going again, but I need a bunch of help. Like, this is a big job. And the second is like, no fucking way. Like, we don't trust you. We're going to have you fix the ship at gunpoint. And if there's a bunch of you, that makes that job much more complicated. But the first, a trusting rube, is like, yeah, I mean, it does sound like a complicated job. So I'll let you have a few of your guys.
He's really like nouveau Jem'Hadar, right? He just doesn't get how things work.
Yeah, he's so gauche, the way he wields his power, his newly got firstness.
Yeah, I mean, he was just born into it.
Yeah.
He didn't have to earn it the way that Xtanarax had to.
Yeah. He was born with a white spoon in his mouth.
Yeah. I love how Sisko has the upper hand, basically, as soon as the starting gun is shot. Like, he sees the angle, he sees the conflict between the first and the second, and yeah. He is stirring that up.
There's a point in the episode where he says to Kira, I think, like, if, in a game of wits, I'd bet on you every time, you know, between you and the Jem'Hadar.
He's not allowed to say that he would bet on himself, though, right? But I'd like to hear him say that.
Yeah. I mean, at some point, it just becomes a little, you know, a little needle-pegging how big his ego is, but he knows that he can trick these fools whenever he wants.
I really like when the Jem'Hadar throw that whole extermination into Sisko's face, the extermination inside that wormhole.
You didn't bring me here to say thank you.
That's dark stuff.
They know his reputation.
Kudakatan has got to be like, you know, in some ways I actually have to thank you because I wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
If you hadn't exterminated all those Jem'Hadar.
Was your understanding in that episode where the unpleasant X-Men were doing all that math that the Federation did in fact concede a planet capable of manufacturing Ketracel White to the Dominion?
Yeah, I thought so.
So the Jem'Hadar are a going concern. It's not like a different brand of Ketracel that the Alpha Jem'Hadar use.
Kudakatan. I just have to say that you might want to take a little bit of a different tack post-genocide. I find when I am around other people to present kind of a sad older man vibe. You know, I would never want anyone to know just how happy I am with my performed genocide of the Hooshnak.
I understand. I'm not trying to drag you here. It is very hard to know how to feel after a genocide because nothing can really prepare you for it.
I want you to know if you need someone to talk to.
I'm always here.
I'm on Delta Runner 4. I'm actually very easy to find.
Honestly, if you just call any number on Delta Runner 4, I will pick up.
That's
they all forward to me.
I mean, one of my regrets is that I really didn't think through the whole genocide thing to the extent that I would be bugged constantly by visitors to Delta Runner 4 and people hailing Delta Runner 4. Most of my day is taken up by just doing callbacks.
You think about the number of times in a month you get a phone call from a random phone number and it's just somebody in Chinese or an IRS scam or somebody trying to sell you different long distance coverage. You multiply that by the population of Delta Runner 4. My day is very busy just answering the phone. What I'm trying to say is any amount of variety in those phone calls would be welcome on my end.
Believe it or not, you've called Kevin Uxbridge. I'm not available to take your call. I'll call you back if I have a free moment. Where could I be?
Believe it or not, the Hoosnack are dead.
This show only has one joke, but I'm glad that it's that one.
It's great.
In the elevator on the way down to the engine room where Sisko is going to begin his work, he starts to kind of dig into the wedge issue that is the fact that Ixtana Rax has been made the second. And, you know, is even trying to kind of instigate some dissent from Ixtana Rax toward the founders. Like the founders think that the Alpha Jem'Hadar are better for this job. What do you think? And that's some pretty controversial hot takes if you're a Jem'Hadar, I want to say.
Yeah. I mean, this is just peak Sisko here.
Yeah.
Like, stirring it up.
Divide and conquer.
I mean, it's unclear whether or not he sees the path out of this, but he knows one thing, and that is if he can sow enough discord between these two, it's going to be better for him.
I thought it was pretty interesting that Ixtana Rax, like, gave up as much about how this works as he did. Like, you would think that, like, the Jem'Hadar would be a little bit sneaky about the fact that a new breed of Jem'Hadar has been developed. Like, you'd think that would be, like, a state secret, but he doesn't really, like, he doesn't seem to care about telling Sisko about how that was done.
I kind of got a little short-timer vibe from Ixtana Rax. In that,
yeah.
What happens to him after retirement? Does he go and die? Is that why he is so quick to quip and cut into Kadakatan?
Oh, he's got like senioritis?
Yeah, like I'm wondering what's motivating this, and I wonder if it's that.
Hmm.
Because
maybe so.
I don't think ordinarily Sisko would have an easy of a time pitting Ixtana Rax and Kadakatan against each
right.
other.
Yeah. Up on the bridge, the Vorta says his goodbyes. They're going to head off and do whatever mission they're going to do.
Let's hope the Federation's dilithium miners will be as surprised to see us as a Defiance crew was.
And the Jem'Hadar on the little D are going to continue the project of getting the warp engines online. And meanwhile, the littler R is going up the large intestine of the little D and trying to find a way into the ship when the plasma ducts start heating up and they realize that they're going to need to find the trap door pretty quickly.
It was taco night the day before on the little D.
Fortunately, there is a flap that they can get through and it just goes right into the engine room.
Jesus, Megan.
I'm sorry, I want to apologize. I'm not even confident of which end that came out of.
I love the sound of this door. When the runabout goes through it, it's a very familiar piece of sound design, and I couldn't quite place it. It sounds like a toy, like a Castle Grayskull flap or something. Like, it just sounded super familiar.
I did not hear the sound, but we'll edit it in here.
The runabout looks like a toy in this episode. Yeah. And if we're playing with toys, I think that sound is very at home. Like, we're driving the Lego car through the garage door, and that's the sound it's going to make.
Right. I wondered in breaking this story if they considered having the runabout be incapable of using its weapons for some reason, mm-hmm. you know, like giving us some techno babble to the effect of, oh, the phasers wouldn't work in the, you know, like the scale of the waves that they are putting out would have no effect on the molecules in normal space or something like that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, maybe this is just that I wanted to see the runabout fly around the ship and kill all the Jem'Hadar. But it does take a long time before they start licking shots at Jem'Hadar.
This was one of the minor beefs I had with the episode, was related to that, Ben. It was like, why didn't they compound problems here?
Yeah.
They just go with the one problem, the shrinking of the runabout, and then that's it. I mean, outside of the takeover of the little D, I mean. Like,
right.
I thought for sure they would stack another clock to it. Like, in 20 minutes, the runabout will embiggen, and they can't control it.
Yeah. Yeah, and then it will destroy the engine room of the ship as it does that.
So it's a race to get in and a race to get out.
That would have been fun.
What are you doing now? Exactly.
Once inside engineering, the runabout, for some reason, is undetected by the Jem'Hadar there. They get to do a nice little tour of the deck, and they get to see all the damage.
The shot through the window of the Jem'Hadar, I thought was really funny.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of the scale, like, there are some genuine gags in this episode, and I thought that they were, like, pretty well written. Like, the comedy is actually nicely done.
How do you think they were lensed for stuff like that? Do you think they're just using standard lenses and racked in, or are they going, like, you can't use a macro lens, that's too close.
Right. I have no idea, like, what.
The reason I ask is, like, portrait lenses are used in such a way that they make the face flattering, but this Jem'Hadar is warped due to his size.
Yeah, it's like a wide angle kind of look, right?
You know they're really thinking about how they're lensed here in order to make that effect, because if you're just using a regular lens and you're getting up close to a person,
right.
I'm not sure if it looks the same. You want that warp to the face.
Aren't most portrait lenses, like, the minimum focal distance is pretty far?
Yeah.
Whereas, like with a wider lens, you can get closer to your subject.
That's why you want, like, an 85 as your portrait lens, right?
Right, yeah. Because it's, like, forcing you back a ways also.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe it's just that they, like, the POV has to be a certain distance from the guy's head, so they have to get a lens that's wide enough to get the whole face in.
That makes total sense. But if that's the case, then, like, I wonder how much work was happening behind the scenes to get this part right. Like, how much experimentation.
I would love to see the camera tests that they did to get these effects. Like, that would be really fun. I wonder if those exist anywhere.
Yeah.
Is there a DVD special feature of this episode?
Would you like to know more?
This scene is the moment where O'Brien finally gets the sensors and comms back online. And it's with the sensors that they're able to just sort of, like, zoom in and enhance on computer stations and see the status of the ship.
Yeah, they sort of turn into a surveillance camera for a little while, mm-hmm. and they figure out that the four officers working in the engine room under the guns of the Jem'Hadar are, in fact, not really working on fixing the ship as such. Kira is actually working on fixing the ship. She's taking her sweet time, but Nog, Worf, and Sisko are all taking part in a deception that is designed to move all the command codes from the bridge down to the control console and engineering so that Sisko can seize the ship back from the Jem'Hadar.
Once they realize this, O'Brien's like, you know, I mean, Nog's smart and everything, but he's not that smart. Like, and now that I think about it, he kind of sucks at this task. So maybe we should go to the bridge and sort of help him out.
Yeah, they kind of become the guardian angels of the crew because they're like working secretly behind the scenes to help their goal.
This is a fun moment because like the challenge of getting into the ship is one thing. It's another challenge to get into engineering. And now they have to make their way to the bridge.
Yeah, this involves like kind of waiting for somebody to go through a door and then like slipping through it behind them, mm-hmm. hiding behind Jem'Hadar as they're walking through the hallways. It's very fun sneaking around, and it's like a mechanic of sneaking around that you never get to see.
Yeah, it's big fun.
It's big, big fun.
I think the effects in this episode are really great.
Yeah, they look awesome. There's no moment that bumps you. I noticed like when they're hiding up in the pipes, when they're doing the surveillance camera stuff, like mm-hmm. the lighting on the pipes is right, which I don't really know how you nailed that. Were they holding like a little miniature ship up there, or was it CG ship and they just did a really great job of digitally relighting it?
I don't know. I couldn't guess, but it's necessary to sell.
Yeah.
What's happening here? Like, I think it looks shitty without it.
Yeah. So they get up to the bridge and they've got to do something with the encryption circuitry on the mm-hmm. bridge, right? And that involves like getting inside a panel, which means they've got to beam a bubble of air into one of the components and then beam the chief in after the bubble of air, and he'll have 20 minutes to get his work done. And this is like a pretty fast smash cut, right? Like we discover that that's how it's going to work. And then the chief tells the doctor, you're coming with me. And then they're beaming into the circuit.
I mean, what's sad about this scene is that it begins that storyline with Miles O'Brien, where he's hooked on huffing compressed air.
Yeah.
But like for the rest of the series.
Picked the wrong week, quit sniffing glue.
That's no good.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a pretty light episode overall, but the compressed air huffing beginning here is pretty dark.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, this does introduce a little bit of a timeline here, because we're told that you get 20 minutes. This compressed air will last 20 minutes, and O'Brien's like, fine, I'll do the mission, but I'm not doing it without Bashir.
Yeah.
So they agree to it, and then they are beamed into a corn maze of isolinear chips, which is great.
God, it was so fun. Like the scaled up isolinear chips they nail. The mm-hmm. I love all the, like, you know, all the plugs and things, like the labels on the little circuit components. Really well conceived, I thought.
You just know that this stuff was thrown in a dumpster afterwards. That's the sad part. Like, there's no reusing a set like this.
Right. When would they ever do that?
Yeah. I thought immediately when I saw these guys beam in, what are they doing with phasers? I thought for sure they would run into an ant or something, like from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Or a vole. They, like, what if there was a vole problem on the little D?
Chief O'Brien slips and falls into a bowl of Cheerios.
Right, right.
But they use the phasers for a little tack weld.
Yeah, I love that.
One of the components. That was great.
The suggestion of different factions of Jem'Hadar is, again, repeated during the toast of the white that's distributed on the bridge.
They never bring like a ton of the white, right?
No.
That crate is never full.
They bring pints instead of fifths to the party. And that's just kind of a little cheap.
Selfish.
Yeah. That's a great point, though. It always seems like they're in danger of running out.
Yeah, which is maybe intentional. I don't know.
It's called cocaine, and you don't want no part of this shit.
Kudakatan is like, look, guys, we don't need to do the toast anymore. Like, we're our own people.
Let's just all agree, actions speak louder than words. And we'll prove our loyalty to the founders by fucking up these federations. There is also some discussion about what the plan B is among Sisko and the other officers helping him with the trying to take the ship back over from engineering. And the plan B is self-destruct. Because Nog is having a real tough time cracking the security measures that would prevent this.
Yeah, and, he's locked he's out. Like,
yeah, if I can't do this, Captain, like, what do I do? And Ed Sisko's like, oh, yeah, we're going to blow up the ship. And you can just see it on Nog's face, like, fuck, why did I join the fucking Federation?
This is
what was I thinking?
I think this is well acted by Aaron Eisenberg, but I wish there was a little bit more time for it, because I think there's dimensionality here where there could be like three dimensionality here. He's mm-hmm. clearly upset by his inability to make this happen. But there's yeah. also, I think, an element that we don't really get, which is, why am I even here?
I'm not even supposed to be here today.
I'm just a cadet, and I'm being forced into this situation that is impossible, and I'm the worst possible choice for this element of it. And that part isn't really pronounced.
Right.
Like, the guilt, I think, is what I'm going for, right?
Right. The two-episode arc of this, I feel like that's a really powerful storyline to tell. Like, I got field promoted to ensign. Like, how the fuck am I supposed to know how to do this stuff?
Yeah. Yeah,
at
because
this point in my career.
By the time Plan B is unveiled as blow up the damn ship, Jean-Luc.
No!
Nog's emotions there are like defiant. Like, fuck yeah, we're going to take these guys down with us, instead of, I couldn't do it. And I feel bad that we're going to die because of me.
I'm getting all of these guys killed because of me, yeah.
Right.
They do, like, they have to hedge, right? Like, they build the automatic self-destruct into the way the engine is being repaired. Like, mm-hmm. they can't like, do the Riker and Picard standing over the engineering table setting self-destruct
uh-huh.
scene, because the Jem'Hadar are there. So what they do is kind of rig the ship to blow once it passes warp one. And then they continue the ruse that they're repairing the engine while trying to trick the Jem'Hadar into thinking that everything's going great.
Morn,
dear sweet morn.
You near, buddy?
Morn,
stop. Hammer time.
I thought for a moment that it would have been fun to have the plan a little more speed-like. Like, like, once they go to warp, they can't ever come out of warp, because once they do, the D explodes. Like, that would make the little D kind of an interesting bomb, right?
Right.
Like, they drive the little D all the way back home.
Bomb on Defiant?
Yeah.
Yeah. You get Cameron from Ferris Bueller's Day Off in there.
I hate to use the word tourist, but it's not like I can hide it.
He could have some strong feelings about these matters.
Shoot the hostage.
What do you do?
You're deeply nuts, you know that?
In the circuit board, O'Brien and Bashir are starting to suffer from hypoxia because there's just not that much air. I wasn't sure if I missed something about why they couldn't beam a second bubble of air into this room.
They cut back to Dax and she's like, we're all out of compressed air. I'm over here walking on sunshine, guys.
The chief loves compressed air, and so do I. I thought like the chief knows how to do this at human scale, but he's looking at everything from 1 centimeter high and is a little lost. And the doctor, I thought it was cool that the doctor is like helping him through this from just a practical standpoint, but the doctor's, like, despite being a super brain, doesn't actually know anything about engineering. So I just thought that was, like, well written, that like Bashir is a genius and is a genius and can, like, do hard math problems in his head on the fly, but doesn't know what, like, the 546 stroke delta isolinear chip does.
And I really like that his solution to the problem is very medical. Like, he's got to fix O'Brien. And the way that he manages to do that is to get O'Brien in a place where he can reconcile the situation. Like,
right. Like, close your eyes and do it from memory. Like, where is this relative to this other thing?
Yeah. Yeah. It feels like good therapy, what Bashir is doing.
In your worst dreams, a duck flies off with your penis.
So they manage to get this thing rewired. They do their little tack weld on the optronic circuit that they reconnect. And And we cut down to engineering, and Nog is very thrilled to discover that whatever he's done has in fact rewired the command codes to engineering.
He's happy to take the credit for a thing he doesn't understand.
I am good.
Come with me.
I think a lot of people early in their career have had things like that happen.
Yeah, I feel that. I see you, Nog.
Yeah. For example, two people early in their podcasting career don't know why they've achieved any success.
I don't know how, but I released the command codes.
This is a fun bit of business here because, like, there's the celebratory, like, the subdued celebration of a Nog going, yes, I did it. And also the crew getting gathered together in order to be berated by Kadakatan.
So the first and the second are down in engineering. And that news is transmitted to O'Brien and Bashir when they get back aboard the Rubicon by Dax. And so they realize that the ship is about to go to warp pretty soon. And so they're going to need to start helping these dudes. And there's some debate, right? Like Xtanarax is like, these guys were not on the up and up when they were doing these repairs. We need to like make sure that they did the repairs that they claim and make sure that this system isn't rigged to blow. And Kudakatan has not learned a thing in this experience and is like, fuck that. Let's fucking get this thing going.
It's great. It's so hubristic and totally in keeping with what we know about him.
Kudakatan has the sheer fucking hubris to get the ship going.
Yeah. Yeah, but this is a problem because we're rigged to blow as soon as they go to warp.
So he's like about to walk off the out of engineering when he opens the door and in rushes the little ship, and we get a great firefight where it is the Rubicon shooting miniature photon torpedoes at Jem'Hadar. Well, you know, Worf is breaking necks. Nog is getting thrown over panels, like. Just a real fun Star Trek fight here.
I mean, we famously don't do any research on this show, so I'm sure this information exists somewhere, but I wonder what the yield is on a torpedo, you know, given the relative shrunkenness of a person, like take the normal yield and shrink that down by the same ratio. I wonder how strong those are.
I wonder, because this is definitely something that has been dealt with in other sci-fi franchises, like Ant-Man plays with this idea. It's like the spaces between subatomic particles are being shrunk, and that's how you're getting smaller. But that means you have the same mass and the same force as you would at your current size. Mm-hmm. And it would be really fun to see a Jem'Hadar get hit by a photon torpedo and just fucking get turned into cat food.
Like, there is never a moment before they fire torpedoes where Dax is like, hold on a second. I mean, if we shoot this thing,
this mother's gonna blow big.
Set the phasers to the lowest possible yield. And I cannot stress this enough. It has to be the lowest. And it's still just like punching hole through the Jem'Hadar and the hull of the ship in one shot.
You know? After the episode, Dax is just haunted by what she's done.
You get the 1,000-yard stare of somebody who can't unsee what they saw.
Concurrently with this, a Star Trek fight breaks out in engineering, and Worf breaks a guy's neck.
Yeah. We've still never seen anyone rip the hose out of a Jem'Hadar's neck.
God,
it was
right there.
I thought this
was going
to be the scene where it happened.
I thought so too. I thought for sure. Maybe we'll get it someday.
Yeah. Anyways, Xtanarax has a very ironical death scene where he is explaining that that Kudakatan didn't have to listen to anything Xtanarax said because obedience is victory, and victory is dot, dot, dot.
I love that it's basically what are you going to do? I mean, Jem'Hadars are going to Jem'Hadar.
He's the scorpion that stung the frog on his way across the river, right?
That's exactly it, yeah.
You really want to do this? Here, now, okay, let's do it!
Aftermath of this fight, the runabout flies up to Worf so that Dax can blow him a kiss through the window. Just one of my favorite shots in the episode.
Worf squints in there to make sure she's not a kid.
She looks full grown, but tiny.
He's like, oh shit, I'm going to have to write that poem.
Yeah. And the button on the episode is set in Quark's bar so that Odo and Quark can have parts in the episode.
We are deprived of the normal sizification process.
That is covered in a captain's log. And then Dax is asking Worf to hear the poem. He's very sensitive about it. But it turns out Worf is just doing bits with the poem. And everybody in Quark's bar is doing bits because Odo comes up to O'Brien and Bashir and says that they look a little bit on the short side to him. And then Quark comes up and agrees. And they've got to rush off to Six Bay.
It is a real end of an A-Team episode type of type of tone here at the end. Real fun.
I did like Worf starting to read,
"There once was a runabout from Nantucket."
Dax is like, I guess it is after hours and we are in the bar.
Did you like the episode, Adam?
Yeah, I did. And I think the reason why is because we're told right up front how to watch it. Like, I think if Kira doesn't laugh in the face of this concept, I think the true extent to its silliness comes a little later than it should. And it might spoil the broth of this thing,
right?
But by front-loading it with that laughter, we're sort of trained into being like, all right, this is cool and fun, whatever. But as much as I did enjoy it, I think there was I know this is a light episode, but there are opportunities not taken here to ratchet up the tension, the conflict, and the danger. And at no point were those choices ever made. So, I mean, maybe that was just in keeping with the whole vibe. Like, why layer cake this thing when we can just keep it simple? So I did like it, but it made me... This was a fun episode for us because I think you and I were taking those exits off of the story and exploring all the little areas untaken.
It's such an interesting season because we started with that crazy long arc about the Dominion War and... We have had bottle after bottle after bottle that have been pretty light. Like there have been like one or two heavy episodes since then, but we're like past the halfway point on the season now. And I'd say that on balance, season six is mostly jokey fun episodes at this point, which I did not expect when we started the season.
No, me neither. Yeah. I mean, it makes me wonder how we're going to end here.
Yeah. Very interesting. One thing I never wonder about is whether or not we have any priority one messages. Should we go check those out?
Let's do that.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental. Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
All right, Adam, we've got a couple of priority one messages here. The first one is from Morn, and it's to two captains. It goes like this. If my calculations are correct, you will receive this letter immediately after you saw Who Mourns for Morn? First, let me assure you that I am alive and well. I've been living silently these past 4 months in the year 2020. Lockdown sucks. So I set myself up as a blacksmith, and I've gotten quite adept at using my Morn hammer.
I mean, is that a masturbation joke?
Boy, yeah, I think it is, Adam. I don't think Morn is pounding rivets. I think he's pounding something else.
Gotta tell you, my pounding rivet rate has gone way down since quarantine began.
Oh, yeah? Mine's probably gone up fivefold.
We're definitely dealing with this trauma differently. Ben, our second priority one message is from Honey Bear to Buttercup, and the message goes like this. Sweet Buttercup, there's no one I would rather spend quarantine with than you. While you hear me chuckle along with a couple of guys who brighten up the world. Best wishes to you and to all.
Wow. Thanks, Honey Bear.
quarantine messages, man. That's what we're getting. I think that helps.
I like that the P1s are coming in fast enough that that Morn couldn't line it up perfectly to coincide with who mourns for Morn. I think, but that's on brand for Morn, right? To like miss it by
right
a little bit.
Totally on brand.
But yeah, we looked at this like one week ago as of this recording, and we didn't have many P1s scheduled, and it's really nice to see that. So if you'd like to schedule one, head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message, and it helps us keep this thing going.
Gotta get that gold press action.
Hey, Adam.
What's up, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
Yeah, I don't know who this was, but it was the very first Jem'Hadar guy to start shooting inside engineering at the runabout.
Yeah, there's a lot of shots getting licked in the atmosphere that look like very close to the warp core.
It made me think of that scene in Hunt for Red October. Like,
yeah,
do not shoot your firearm in here.
Things in here don't react well to bullets.
I expected that kind of line of dialogue too, but Jem'Hadars don't care.
They're fucking idiots.
What about you, Ben?
Mine is Nog for the line "I am good" when the security lockouts get fixed.
Oh no! Yeah,
just that little fist bump. That was very funny to me. I laughed out loud. I thought that the performance of that line was really great. I mean, it's got to be like I imagine you get a little protective of your character when you're an actor, and to like really sell a line that makes your character look like a fucking fool has got to feel a little bit like I bet,
this is what I think about with Rom all the time.
Right. Yeah, like, but Rom is like asked to do that a lot, mm-hmm. and I feel like Nog less so. Yeah. Nog is a much more sincere character in a lot of ways, and yeah, I thought that was really funny.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, did too. Good ones.
Do you want to see what we've got next week on The Greatest Generation?
What do we got coming up?
The next episode is season 6, episode 15, Honor Among Thieves. An undercover operation turns personal for O'Brien when he befriends his criminal contact.
Are we sure we're talking about O'Brien here? O'Brien has criminal contacts?
Apparently so.
Is he getting like bootleg Viagra?
I feel like this is an episode where O'Brien is wearing a lot of leather jackets.
Ooh.
It's been a while since I've seen this one, but he's like hanging out in bars. It's very, he's probably like asking the pianist in the corner to play Melota. All right, Adam, I need to go over to gach.biz/game, where we keep the game of buttholes, the will of the prophets. And currently our runabout is on square 55. That is right in between a Quark's bar and a looking at each other during. And we could hit that looking at each other during. I think that's all we can potentially hit right now.
Yeah, that's the death sentence square at this point.
Yeah, sure.
Stakes got really high with that square.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
I'm going to go ahead and roll this bone. What do you say?
Do it.
Oh, my God. I rolled a 1. It's a looking at each other during. We're looking at each other during today.
I know. I guess we'll have to do that again. I'm not coming over, Ben.
No.
I think
can't
that would
do
be.
That.
We have to set a good example.
Yeah.
We must maintain quarantine.
We're quarantine influencers, and we're going to continue to set a good example.
2 weeks after that episode drops is the last episode of Greatest Gen. RSVP Ben and Adam.
Yeah. They weren't getting any ventilators from their listener supporters.
We treated the game of buttholes lightly. We didn't know how much power it had.
We should not do that. Anyways,
it's like the Ark of the Covenant we're messing with.
How do we deal with the fact that we landed on a square that we're like forbidden by law from doing?
Well, because we can't do that, I have a proposition for you. In the deep, deep distance on our game board, there's a Kenar with Damar square, which I don't recall.
Yeah, we've never done that.
I don't recall us ever doing that. So how about we do that in honor of a great man, a great Cardassian man.
Drink is the antidote.
Much like the sonar computer on the American submarine in Red October, going home to geology assessments, we will run home to Drunkisode on our next episode by doing our first ever Kenar with Damar.
That's almost exactly what I was going to say, Ben.
It's a perfect analogy.
Yeah.
So we'll come up with recipes and everything, right?
Great. Yeah, let's do it like that.
Fun. So next week we will fuck up the show.
One thing that fucks up the show in a great way is the support of our many friends of DeSoto who, after taking care of themselves and their friends and family, have seen if there's anything left over for your friendly neighborhood podcasters. They'll go over to MaximumFun.org/join to keep this show going.
Yeah, we really, really appreciate the folks that do that. The free ways that you can support are, of course, recommending the program to a friend or loved one. You can go on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use and leave a nice rating and review. We also got to thank our buddy Adam Ragusea, who made the original theme music for the show, of course, based on Dark Materia's Picard song, which used to be the theme music for the show. We got to thank Bill Tilly, who makes custom trading cards about every episode of the show. He posts those on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. I'm on Twitter at BenjaminAHR. Adam is on Twitter at CutForTime.
Twitter is like all I'm doing lately. It's a problem. Like before,
I'm doing way less of it now.
Before quarantine, it was like I had quit smoking, and now after quarantine, I'm just chain smoking Twitter. It sucks.
I set a limit on my phone. I'm not allowed to use it for more than a certain amount of time every day.
How about that? That's why you're not returning my texts. I can find you playing Jazz Horse if I want to get a hold of you that much.
That's where I'm at. Me and Chuck Bryant riding horses around together.
Yeah, that's a good posse right there.
Yeah, that's fun. Oh, hey, we also have a couple of other shows on Maximum Fun. We would love it if you would check out The Greatest Discovery and Friendly Fire. And, you know, if you've watched all of Deep Space Nine and you're looking for other stuff to do, well, you have a little bit of extra spare time. Watching through all of Discovery or watching through some of the old war movies that we talk about on Friendly Fire is a great diversion because we can be there with you to unpack them and joke around about them. And I think anybody that likes this show would like both of those two shows.
Good rec.
Yeah.
And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine, that says it's not that I hate you, criminal contact. It's what you've made me wear.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.